Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week with Dr. T, our weekly news program that is now at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time every single week. I hope by now you've joined the Tenpenny Prime membership, the educational program specifically designed for members that week two, you get a topical white paper. Week three, you will get a recorded presentation. Week four, you will have a live event that's Ask the Experts that we have chosen specifically for the topic of the month. These are specifically for our membership area, and all of our podcasts are now free. They are now at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. My Substack are on Saturday and Sunday, and this is a new way that we can have a lot of free content and a little bit of paid content that helps us do all the work that we do. So we have a big mix of free and membership content. Join us, make 2025 the year of knowledge, empowerment, and action. And thank you for your continued support. To become a member, go to shoptenpenny.net, shoptenpenny.net. Hover over the membership tab, and it will show you all the different ways that you can join as a monthly member or as an annual member. So with that, before I introduce to you today's special guests, Caroline Pover and Brianne Drezin, the authors of Worth a Shot, Secrets of the Clinical Trial Participant Who Inspired a Global Movement. We're going to take a really quick break. This is a really, really interesting and timely topic. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Well, welcome back, everyone. Caroline Pover is a teacher, publisher, and writer. In 2021, she experienced a severe adverse reaction to a single dose of the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine. The dramatic effects stopped her previously productive life, and that was very fulfilling to her, and it put things on hold for about 3 years. And despite her best efforts and spending almost $50,000 US on treatments, she's in the UK, by the way, she continues to adjust the limitations of her vaccine injury. Brianne Drezin, a former preschool teacher, her life changed after suffering severe neurological injuries from a COVID vaccine clinical trial. She co-founded React19.org, a great organization that we've talked a lot about on this show, to support the vaccine injured, advocating for recognition, medical care, and justice. She has testified before governments and filed lawsuits against the U.S. government and the pharmaceutical companies. And her story is the focus of Worth a Shot, written by Carolyn Pover, who exposes corruption in vaccine trials and the suppression of vaccine injury reports. Oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about. Together, Brianne and Caroline are giving a voice to the vaccine injured, specifically from the COVID-19 jabs, challenging powerful institutions and demanding accountability on a global scale. Caroline and Brianne, welcome so much to This Week with Dr. T. You know, you're right up my alley, and I've been doing vaccine advocacy work, talking about problems associated with vaccines for 24 years. I put over 50,000 hours of research into this. So what has happened to people during the COVID jab is just, it's just more than a travesty. In fact, I have a new book that's coming out in March, and the name of the book is zero accountability in a broken system. And much of the, there's three entire chapters dedicated to vaccine injuries from the COVID jab. So I'm really looking forward to hearing your firsthand account. Brianne, so let's start with you. You want and talk about how did you decide to participate in a clinical trial? I've long wondered about that, how someone comes to the decision to inject foreign matter, and specifically in this case, experimental foreign matter, and somehow thinking that was okay. How did you decide to participate in that clinical trial?
You know, it just felt like it was the right thing to do for society, right? So at the very beginning of the pandemic, we were doing the social distancing, we were doing the masking. I have medical professionals that are in my family, and they couldn't get access to masks in the hospitals. So they were walking around with soiled masks on their faces for weeks at a time, right? Which is not healthy for anyone, especially people that are doing surgeries. So we were following the science on the vaccines because the promise repeatedly told was that the vaccines were going to get us all out of the pandemic. It was going to stop the virus, and we were all going to be able to go about with our daily lives. Phase one clinical trials, the information that came out was great. Phase two was great. And then phase three also looked pretty solid. And at that point, when I got involved, they were just trying to tally up more numbers so they could get these things licensed. So it was much more of a like a humanitarian drive for myself. I wanted to help society and help us all get, you know, out of the mess that we were in. And that was my way of doing it. Little did I know that the information that I was trusting was not at all accurate. And so, yeah, and I've been paying for that choice ever since.
And Caroline, how did you d choose to take the AstraZeneca shot and just get one jab before you were severely injured?
I've spent since 2011 helping a very remote community in the northeast of Japan that was destroyed after the tsunami, and I went back to them every year and to help them. And the reason that I got the jab was because I was under the impression that I would need that to be able to travel. So it wasn't well, to be not to travel socially, but to travel, it was because I was volunteering overseas, so I thought that I would need it for that. I didn't actually get it for anything to do with COVID. I got it just so I could get back to a community that had been forgotten, and I didn't want them to feel that I'd forgotten them.
Those are both big commitments on both of your part. You know, they're both really, even though you said you didn't do it for humanity, yes, you did, because you wanted to go back there for that community. I've always wondered how people come to that decision, particularly when they volunteer their children for vaccine clinical trials. This is a brand new vaccine we've never injected in humans before, but we're going to try it on you. I've often wondered how people justify that thinking of foreign matter and foreign chemicals. That they do they just do people just believe their doctors and believe the scientists that it's safe and not going to cause any harms? I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I mean, I'm truly, seriously trying to understand the
No,
thought.
I think that's good that you asked those questions. We don't get asked those questions enough, actually. And anybody who took the COVID vaccine or any other vaccine, they often don't get asked those questions with compassion and kindness, which is and a genuine w willingness and interest in learning, which is what you're doing now. So we appreciate that. I think the answer behind that is vaccine ignorance. I always describe myself as being vaccine ignorant. So I can't say that I was pro-vaccine because I wasn't educated enough to say that I was pro-vaccine, but I was vaccine ignorant. And the fact is that the vast majority of people do not know these kinds of reactions can happen. When I was diagnosed on the same day that I had the vaccine, I actually argued with the paramedics and said, "Oh, but this can't possibly, surely this can't possibly happen from a vaccine. This doesn't happen. Vaccines don't do this." And I think that's the reason why most people or some people will volunteer for clinical trials or be willing to take a vaccine is simply because they don't know what happens if it goes wrong, and they don't know what kinds of things can happen when it does go wrong. But I think there's basically a willingness to help humanity and kindness and a sense of wanting to help is the reason behind people doing it. But it is from ignorance on both our parts.
Rianne?
I think she summed it up really greatly. It's a hard thing for people, and we actually talk about this a little bit in the book. It's hard to accept and realize that the world is that messed up that we were deceived to the point where we were willing to offer up our bodies for science, right? Mm. But it's also, it kind of also points to where we were, because like, and I'm not sure where Caroline was, but I did out of love for other people, right? But that's also why I do what I do now. So why do I do what I do now? Because I see just how bad the damage is from the lies that are being told. And I want to make sure that this doesn't happen to other people, and the people that are suffering can get some measure of relief. So it's not so much, and I don't know if ignorant is the right translation, at least how it's used in America, because in America, ignorant is usually used to, you know, portray someone as being really, really dumb. But there's actually a lot of education that goes into it. I know the parents of the people that have vaccinated their kids, every one of them, it's like the biggest suffering point for them now after their child's injury. So I do feel that it's incredibly important for people to take a step back before confronting people with this. Like, why did you do it? That was such a bad idea. Because these people are, that's like the primary thing that they're suffering with already. And for these parents, it haunts them every single day of their life that they, you know, that they unknowingly were beguiled into making this decision that permanently harmed their child. So it's definitely a delicate balancing act of how to have this type of the conversation.
That can be with any vaccine, not just the COVID jab. But Caroline, I have to agree with you that it is about that, because I know years ago, you know, I said I've been doing this for 24 years. Before that, I was an emergency medicine physician and the director of a level 2 trauma center for 12 years. I never read a package insert. I really thought, and I think that people are taught, that what is coming through that needle is a little dead or attenuated virus or a little piece of the bacteria and some sterile water. They have no idea of all the rest of the ingredients that are in there, the aluminum, the polysorbate 80, the Triton X100, and on and on. And then when you talk about the COVID jabs at the very beginning, if you remember, the package inserts were a big piece of blank paper. There was nothing that, even if you knew a little bit about vaccines and you wanted to investigate it, when they took out the package insert and they unfolded it and they just rolled it out, there was nothing on it. It was a big blank piece of blank paper. So even if people did know to look at the package insert and look at the ingredients, they weren't listed. So I think, Caroline, I think you nailed it. It is really somewhat a matter of trust. And the other is somewhat a matter of, well, the only thing that's in there is a little virus, because they sell it that if we inject this virus into you, your body will develop an antibody and you'll be resistant to it. And people think that that's all there is to it. I know that that's true because I personally, as a physician, had the same experience 30 years ago. I mean, what could possibly be in there? A little dead measles virus and a little water, not knowing all the rest of the things. So I think that that's really, really a good spot on. And Brianna, what you were saying about a delicate conversation, that's really, really true. And we usually advocate for people to start just by asking questions. You know, what was your thought process of doing that? Did you know anything about it? What have you learned since then? Have you learned about the ingredients? And asking questions is easier and a better way to talk about a delicate situation than confrontation.
So I think we've lost the ability to ask questions with a genuine desire to learn something. And we tend to ask questions to give ourselves the opportunity to share our own personal opinion. And that has happened a lot within the vaccine injured world, on both sides, whatever questions are being asked. And I think just in general, for anything, we all need to become better at asking questions for the purpose of learning something about the other person's experience or something that can help us develop our own opinions about things. So we just need to become better at the way that we ask and the way that we listen.
That's very, very good. That's really good. So tell us, Brianna, tell us a little bit about your injuries and what led you to start React 19, which is a phenomenal organization. I've had Jessica Sutta on with us here a couple months ago now, and we talked a lot about React 19 and where you're going with that. But let's start with your injuries first and tell us a little bit about your story, and then Caroline, you can chime in and tell us a little bit about your story too.
Yeah, we love Jessica. She's just warm and caring, and she's risked a lot by doing what she's doing. I don't think people realize the level of anger and repercussions and hate that she's endured just because she spoke out about her literal physical condition. So I guess going back to my injury. So when I enrolled in the clinical trial, the drug companies agreed to help me medically and financially if there was a problem. And there's a contract that they were supposed to do those two things. So that helped me feel more confident about going into this. I was like, okay, these guys have put it down in writing that if there is a problem, which we weren't expecting there to be a problem, but if there was, that there would be a safety net there. My reaction started within an hour. Started on the drive home from the clinic, and it was tingling down the same arm as my injection. It spread to the other arm, spread to my legs. And it then surged, evolved to surge through my body 24/7. It moves with my heartbeat, and I still have it to this day, 4 years later. In addition to that, I have all the typical, POTS and dysautonomia symptoms that people get, like the tingling or the heart rate dysregulation, where you'll just be sitting there and all of a sudden your heart will just take off for no reason, or the passing out, the brain fog, the severe food sensitivities. And what I didn't realize at the time is that most of my symptoms were actually pretty textbook for previous vaccines, HPV vaccine, flu vaccine, and I could never imagine dealing with even one of these symptoms as a child, let alone 20 as a child. At least as adults, we can articulate things because we're adults, right? And even being an adult, it's difficult. It's really difficult to articulate what's going on with how many systems get set off by this, right? So it's been a nightmare of a situation. But the reason why we started React 19 is because the government was failing us. The drug companies were failing us. And there is such a sheer mass of people that have been harmed by the COVID vaccines that we were able to gather and start advocating for ourselves and for our community. And that's really why we launched. And that's also when we crossed paths with Jessica Sutta. And she's been a very powerful force in trying to get the word out. And she's done a lot to help expand the reach of this conversation. Because as we were talking about before, people don't know. And people didn't know about vaccine injury at all, before the COVID vaccines. I think the sheer mass of people that have been harmed by the COVID vaccines has kind of expanded that circle of people that are actually even somewhat aware of what's going on. But beyond that, we're still being siphoned into a little hollow corner. And so Jessica, with her big microphone, has been able to really come out and push that even further into a different sphere.
And for those who are listening who don't know who Jessica Sutta is, Jessica Sutta was one of the Pussycat Dolls, and she was very, very famous as a singer and, an actor. And now that she's no longer doing that, I've ran into her at a conference right before the inauguration here. She's just a lovely human being. She really is just, you know, not only was she famous and a big singer and, you know, big in Hollywood and all those things, she's very pretty and she's petite. She's a lovely human being and really on board with really helping this. I mean, she had her own injuries. And, you know, so the other people that are involved in React 19, I know that you have lawyers and accountants and advocates and people like that. What can, you know, jumping ahead here a little bit, how can people get in if they've had a COVID vaccine injury? Now, we know that there have been at least 1.7 million VAERS reports filed for vaccine injured from people from the COVID vaccine. And that is staggering, knowing that VAERS collects about 10% of vaccine injuries. The problem is that people filed their injury report with VAERS instead of with the CICP program, the countermeasure injury compensation program that nobody knew anything about. And that's a lion's share of what I talk about in my upcoming book about zero accountability. Because filing your injury report with the VAERS program, and I said this in the book, and I've talked about it a lot. It's like going to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles here in the US, going to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles and trying to buy a plane ticket. You went to the wrong agency to get what, even though it's still about travel, it's the wrong agency. So what is React 19 doing to help these vaccine injured people? And what else can we do to get them some relief?
Well, you know, I'm really glad that you brought up the no liability, right? So, with the VAERS system in particular, you're right. It goes into a black hole. We did an audit at React 19 because we have a sheer mass of people that we can draw their information from. And we found that one in three reports is missing out of the public system. One in three reports. Mine is actually one of those. We requested the FDA do an external audit after we found this massive discrepancy, and of course they wouldn't do it. So that was one of the many failures that led us to, well, crap, they're not going to do what they need to, so we need to do it ourselves. So we developed a compensation program because even if people are able to file in the CICP, which is the only financial way, the only way that people can remedy their problems financially is through the CICP program. It currently has a 98% rejection rate. You cannot have any legal representation. You have 1 year to file, and the requirements for qualifying are insanely high, if not impossible. Several vaccine injury compensation.
They haven't even, that's part of the problem. They don't have a, so there's nothing there as a standard to know what you are, what, okay, I have myocarditis. Well, it's not on the table, so it's not a tabled injury. So you can't file a claim.
Exactly.
It's horrible. It's the most horrible thing I've seen in 24 years of doing this.
Yes, exactly. So, and the thing is the government knows, Congress knows it's a failure. You know, all the senators we've talked to know it's a failure, but none of them will actually stick their head up enough to actually fix the problem because they don't want to be perceived as anti-vax, right? Because their image is more important than actually helping people. So the CICP to date has paid $440,000 total for all COVID vaccine injuries nationwide.
Wait a minute.
300.
Not just the code that goes all the way back. That includes the H1N1 and the smallpox vaccine, and it goes all the way back to when it first started. The actual COVID-19 injuries that they paid are like 43.
Well, I'll explain that.
Okay.
They added because they got so much heat last year, right? Because we put enough pressure in Congress to actually get a hearing on this, right? And in the hearing, they were like, you guys have paid out $40,000 in 4 years of the COVID vaccines. So then HRSA, who is the agency tasked with covering this program, they comped a death benefit for $370,000. So that bumped their total up into the $400,000 range. So once you take out that outlier of the death benefit, you're looking at an average payout of $4,000. So you get one payment, $4,000, if you're lucky. And only myocarditis and anaphylaxis are the two things that they will cover. Everything else has been denied. There's no you don't know why it's been denied. There is no disclosure on who's reviewing your case. You just happen to get a letter in the mail of reject. That's a notification that you're rejected. And then that's it. And you don't even know when that's going to come. It could come 4 years later. It could come 5 years later. It could come, you know, weeks after. So at React 19, because this program is a failure, it's not going to get fixed in any reasonable timeline. We started what's called a care fund, and we pay for people's out-of-pocket medical expenses. These are grants between $6,000 to $10,000, and we've issued over $1 million to date to people that have been harmed by COVID vaccines for out-of-pocket medical expenses.
It's wonderful, but as you know, that's, you know, like barely a trip to the ER.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's so hard, because it's like we know that it's just a small bridge that we're, and it's just to get people by, you know. I mean, the applications that come in, these are people that, you know, they have $47 in their checking account. They've got zero in their savings. They've completely run their 401k and their Roth IRA down to zero, right? I mean, these are people that are in a desperate situation, and the government still, with all of these social programs that are supposed to support people for exactly this type of reason, those programs don't work for vaccine injury. And they haven't for a long time. But before, it was children that were getting injured. And so it was a little bit of a different demographic, a little bit of a substantial burden on the system, but in a different lane, right? And so now you've got adults that are tasked with taking care of themselves and their families financially that are now getting hit. And there was no safety net for them.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we could talk for probably 3 or 4 hours just about this, and this sort of this part of your book. But Caroline, how did you and Brianne get hooked up together and to write this book together? The book's title is called Worth a Shot: Secrets of the Clinical Trial Participant Who Inspired a Global Movement, which is really Brianne Drezin's story. How did the two of you get connected to write this book together?
I was posting about what happened to me, and I didn't know anybody. I hadn't heard of anybody that had had a reaction. I was posting online, just talking about what had happened to me, and I said to people, rather than saying, you know, either go do this, don't do this, I really wanted people to make up their own minds. And I was saying to people, if you're interested, go and read the clinical trial data. And somebody commented on my post, Facebook post, saying, oh, but the clinical trial data isn't correct. There's people who had adverse reactions in the clinical trials and they were dropped. And at that point, this would have been in the spring of 2021, and I was bombarded with people saying all sorts of stuff, some of which I had no idea whether it was true or not. It was a very confusing time. But because I was so public, I was literally bombarded with all sorts of private messages and people saying all sorts of things. And I learned to turn around and say to people, well, can you show me this? Can you send me links to this? Can you prove it? Can you, you know, I was looking for the truth, because the truth was always really important to me. What's the truth underneath all of this? So if somebody was claiming there was somebody in a clinical trial who got dropped, then, well, you know, why should I believe that? And she said, oh, I know her. So I said, can you introduce me to her? And she introduced me to Brianne, gave me her contact information. And I said, can I have a call with you? Because I also developed this thing. I needed to be able to look somebody in the eye and learn about their experience before I could decide whether it was truth or not. Because there is a lot of messy things going around. And she, you know, all credit to Brianne. I mean, she was suffering really badly at that time, and she agreed to speak to me. And we met on a call like this, and I was probably quite direct, as I am. And she was, I feel terrible now when I think back to it, but she was very kind, very forthcoming. And I think wasn't taken aback by my directness at all. And we just kind of connected, didn't we, after that? And we stayed in touch, and we were part of the same support groups, and we just developed a friendship over the years. And then last year, she she, well, maybe Bree can take the story from then about why she asked me to write the book. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, Caroline has written books in the past, and she's being very humble. She was a incredible force for good when it came to the tsunami when it hit Tohoku, Japan. And this little visit that she was supposed to be there for a couple of months, she ended up staying there for years, trying to help rehab the community after this terrible disaster. So the COVID vaccine debacle is not Caroline's first, you know, run at tragedy and writing about tragedy. And so reading that book and seeing just how powerful she is through the written words that she is able to put out, because she's put out several things for the COVID vaccine injured in the past. It was just a perfect fit for this next project, right? Because this is such a complex story to tell, because it's not just an injury story. It's a story of government cover-up. It's a story of drug company cover-up. It's a story of, you know, really testing the bounds of what humanity is and who is there to help you when things go wrong. And believe it or not, all of us have that answer wrong. It's usually not who we expect is going to step up and help us. But then at the very foundation of this story, we always wanted this. And that's why we aligned so well on this, because Caroline and I both wanted this to be a story of integrity, factually accurate, but founded in scientific fact, but also in love and decency, instead of this blood and gore and tragedy. And, you know,
there's been a lot of people, haven't there, who've been trying to tell our stories. And they have done them in such a fear-mongering way that it almost feels irresponsible to be telling our stories in that way. And I wanted to share Brianne's story in a very responsible way. And I wanted to tell her story and do go through the whole process while handling her very carefully. So being very respectful of her. We've all been interviewed by people who just want the horrible, gory details about the most horrific experience of our lives, where we felt like we were about to die, probably multiple times. We've all been interviewed by those people who want that out of us. And then we're kind of left having, you know, spilt our innermost feelings and fears, and then kind of discarded while somebody makes a whole load of money on whatever show they might be doing. And I didn't want Brianne to have that experience for this book. And I felt that if she was going to be going with another writer, perhaps who wasn't injured themselves, or perhaps hasn't had experience in writing about people's pain the way I did with the tsunami survivors, then I felt that this could actually be quite a damaging experience for her, and an experience that ultimately led the reader to feeling completely disheartened and disillusioned with humanity. So it felt like the entire project, the book, had to be handled very, very carefully for a number of different reasons and in a number of different ways.
Wow, that's really lovely. Well, let's take a quick break here this morning, because this is so interesting, and I feel like I'm so bonded with the two of you that we could talk for days. We should like pour a cup of tea and just keep chatting. It would be great. Well, we're talking to Caroline Pover and Brianne Drezin, the authors of Worth a Shot: Secrets of the Clinical Trial Participant Who Inspired a Global Movement. There's more to come. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our Opti line, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries, and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast, when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store.
Well, welcome back, everyone. You know, I think that what you said is really, really true in terms of it kind of circles back to what we started with about asking questions really because you really want to know and not asking questions from a gotcha, you know, sort of perspective. And so since this, since all of these injuries and you've written this book and it's come out, have you had the opportunity to speak to Naomi Wolf about her book on the Pfizer papers? Have either of you spoken to her, or are you familiar with the book?
I'm familiar with it. Yeah, we haven't talked to her yet about it. We've emailed her and told her we're, you know, really grateful that she put that out, but we haven't talked to her any further than that.
The audience, I'll just make a, because she's been on my show. What Naomi's an investigative journalist, and she was on Steve Bannon's show, and they were talking about the Pfizer papers that had been court ordered to be released, 450,000 pages of documentation. And I always say this over and over again. If you have a printer at your house and you go to the store and you buy a packet of paper for your printer, that's 500 pages. Now imagine having 90 of those stacked all over your dining room table. That's how many pages is 450,000 pages that came. And she and her team of more than 3,000 scientists and doctors and investigators sorted through that and found and sorted the data into neurologic and reproductive and cardiovascular. And it's an oversized book and it's pretty thick. And it's kind of heavy. And it shows you pictures of MRIs and CAT scans and pathology slides and all these different things and explains them. And, you know, her conclusion was unequivocally they knew. The government knew, the FDA knew, the CDC knew, everybody knew from day one that even before they released these, both the Pfizer shot and the Moderna shot here in the U.S. and the J&J shot, and then, of course, the AstraZeneca shot internationally, they knew. They knew all of this. And Peter McCullough, I've heard him say, he's also been on my show and he's a friend of mine, that, and he's been on these review panels. And he said, we knew within the first 3 weeks, there was enough signals of injuries, of deaths, of all these things that had happened. We knew that that should have been shut down. And when you look backwards in time in American history, back to 1976, when they had the swine flu pandemic, that they wanted to vaccinate everybody in the entire country. They had 50 deaths and about 150 reported cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome, and they shut the program down in 6 weeks. Here we are 5 years later, 17 million deaths that we estimate worldwide, hundreds of thousands of people who have died here in the U.S., if not millions, millions and millions of people injury. I saw a report yesterday of someone who died of a pulmonary embolism that they related back to one of the COVID vaccines. 555 days, that's 2 years after they had had a COVID shot. So people are still succumbing either from injuries or deaths from these jabs. But here
can
we are.
Can I add something about numbers? So there are actually quite a lot of books that are written about adverse reactions and to the COVID vaccine, and there's lots of numbers and data. There's a lot of data out there, the same way that data was used to convince people, supposed data was used to convince people to get the vaccine. There's also rather a lot of data around how many people may or may not have died or been injured by the COVID vaccines. And what we tried to do, what's missing from all of those conversations is the very real human story. And that may well be because for the last 4 years, everybody's been talking about this and people are a bit tired of it. So they just look at the how many thousands, how many hundreds of thousands, how many millions of people have been affected. But we forget what that actually means. And that conversation has kind of disappeared a little bit. And what we try to do with the book is, yes, there are some numbers in there, but basically it's about a real person's story. It's about what actually happens to your relationship, to your children, to your money, to your home, to your family, to your friends, to your job, to your sense of self. What happens to all of those things when you have an adverse reaction? And not just what happens to those things in the first few days, but what happens to those things in years, for years afterwards, and how do you deal with that? And that that kind of conversation has still been a bit lost. People seem less interested in talking about that. So I think that this is a way to share that experience with people who might kind of zone out when it comes to the numbers, or they might not be willing to even have the conversation. And we try to make it a book that means that anybody can relate to it, because it is ultimately a human story.
So Brianna, why don't you relate on that a little bit? What does happen to your relationships, to your spouse, to your children, to your family, to your neighbors, to your jobs? Why don't you expound on that a little bit and tell about your story that you talk about in the book, Worth a Shot?
Well, Caroline's a pretty hard act to follow, as you've seen. She has a way of saying things that I think everybody can relate to. But it's powerful what she says, right? And then her writing is even more powerful. So no, when it comes to your injury, it's we've talked about it in simpler terms, like it's kind of like a bomb goes off, right? And the blast radius consumes your family, it consumes your friends, it consumes everything. And Bobby Kennedy has said it best, right? When it comes to your health, if you lose your health, you only want one thing in life, and it's to get better. And anyone that's dealt with any kind of chronic illness can definitely relate with that statement, because without your health, you have nothing. Your identity changes, your challenge of your self-worth is always on this roller coaster of, you know, ups and downs. Your relationships suffer. With chronic illness, 70% of relationships fail. Which is a big, big number. Usually when it comes to being the person that's disabled, there goes your financial support as well. It's your entire world goes upside down, and to lose essentially everything, it takes a lot of will for people to put those pieces back together. Because the pieces still, when you put them back together, they don't always fit, and they definitely don't fit like they used to. So it's you have to essentially be reborn. You have to go through several stages of grief, to get to a place where you hit your new normal. And your family too. Your family has to go through extreme changes too. They have to go through the same kind of reevaluation. You know, it's hard.
And how have you navigated that? How has that worked for you?
Well, we go through that a lot in the book, because it's not like a simple process to describe. Anybody that has experienced like this level of substantial loss can relate to, you know, the lessons that are gleaned from the book. Caroline puts it together in a way that people have described reading the book as it's like a hug. Reading the book is essentially like a hug, and it's because it goes through these really challenging ways of coping and putting your life back together in a way that people can understand, but it's also done with such a sensitivity that people will stick around and finish the book through to the end.
And I think that's one of the values of not only your book, but of React 19, that people can realize they're not alone. They're not the only person that this happened to, and that they can share their stories and find camaraderie in a kind of an unusual sort of way, but shared experiences of the war that you were wounded in.
And it's yeah. And I appreciate you bringing that up, because obviously React 19 is just one group, right? There's multiple groups that are advocating for people. Caroline Pover is actually a trustee of UKCV Family, which is the equivalent of React 19, but in the UK, and they have done phenomenal work. And so we've connected with 20 other organizations globally that are just like React 19, that are founded by people harmed, advocating for people that are harmed. And so Caroline, just, she's a writer, she's injured, but then she's also heading a, you know, equally important movement for those in the UK. As we are here in the U.S.
So you said 30 worldwide?
There's 20 that we are partnered with. There's definitely 30 out there, but there's 20 that we all have come together and have decided to move with a specific group of goals in mind.
Can you give us sort of a short list of the number of countries that are a number of organizations or where they are?
Because yeah, they're all over the globe, right? So it's if you look up COVIDVaccineInjuryAlliance.org, so it's the CVIA. There's, you know, there's US, UK, Australia, Japan, Germany. I can't remember if we have India on there, Caroline. We have Israel, Finland, Sweden, Italy. I don't know
Belgium,
what other ones I'm missing.
Belgium covers France too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. The reason I wanted to address that was because that tells the listener how pervasive this problem is and what a global disaster this has been. And, you know, with the looming thing about bird flu and another pandemic and all that stuff, I'm hoping that enough people have woken up to this disaster and said, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, that ain't going to happen. You know, do you feel like that's that people are to that point of saying, I'm not doing this again. I don't care what they tell me.
We had the COVID inquiry module 4 going on in the UK last month, and I attended pretty much every day of it in person. And the running theme was how do we establish trust? And in my opinion, the purpose of them wanting to establish trust was to create more clinical trials in the UK, more vaccine manufacturing in the UK, and to get more vaccines in arms in the UK. So that felt like that was the purpose of the COVID inquiry. But what I saw going on in the hearing does not reflect what I see amongst the general public. I hear conversations from people who are questioning everything now. And it's not just vaccinating the COVID, it's not just the COVID vaccine, it's all vaccines, including ones for their pets. So that's the level of questioning that I see. And I know that my reality probably is a little bit more skewed towards those conversations, but that's because I've made myself a safe person for people to talk to about their questions. But what was going on in the COVID inquiry does not reflect what I see in amongst the general population in the UK anyway. I don't know about in America.
Very good. You know, I was doing a little research on something I was writing last night, and I came across these two numbers. One was that as far back as 2007, there were more than 152 prophylactic vaccines in development for various types of bioterrorism threats. And thanks to the new mRNA and CRISPR technologies, as of December 2024, 286 vaccines are under development. It's a vaccination nation and a vaccination world that we have. They have wholeheartedly looked at humanity as a pincushion, and we've been duped into believing that injecting foreign matter into our body somehow keeps us healthy. So we've got just a few minutes left, and I want to give both of you an opportunity for closing thoughts on your book, Worth a Shot, Secrets of a Clinical Trial Participant Who Inspired a Global Movement. Brianna, you want to go first there and sort of closing thoughts on your book and on where we're going with this vaccination world that we have?
You know, you touched on it pretty well, right? That there's over 200 vaccines that are in development. So this notion that the vaccination program in the US is this delicate little flower that we need to protect, I think is kind of out there. You know, Senator Warren talked about that, how RFK can single-handedly destroy vaccines for everyone, right? But the reality is the drug companies have done a phenomenal job at making sure that they're so well protected that this is no longer this delicate little limping flower. It's a booming multi-billion dollar industry that does not need to be protected by the US taxpayer any longer. But as far as the book goes, 100% of the proceeds go to React 19 and our partner organization in the UK, UKCV Family. So if people want to pick up this book and have a good read, be entertained by it, also learn a few things. Everybody thinks that they know everything there is to know about the COVID pandemic debacle. I promise you, there's plenty of things in there that people still have no idea went on. But then also you're going to be able to, you know, rest well knowing that your contributions are going to go to good causes.
That's good. And I want to make sure everybody knows it's COVID. It's a react19.org. And, you know, to really get involved with that. And that's really a generous contribution of things that you're doing. Caroline, what would you like to say in closing today?
My personal motivation for advocacy work, and that includes writing the book, is always about compassion. I think that even if we throw money at vaccine injured, or if we have treatment pathways created, those things are great. But if people don't learn to be kinder to each other and create a kinder culture, then there will still be the kind of struggles that are very difficult to quantify. So I hope that people pick it up, pick up the book, get the book, read it with an open mind. And I think that they will find it to be, particularly towards the end, very unexpected. But ultimately the mission, the kind of my mission is to create more compassion and kindness.
Very good. And one more time for the listeners, and I'm sure you can find the book at Amazon and all the places, that all the regular booksellers. Do you also have websites where they can buy directly from you, Carolyn?
Skyhorse Publishing is the publisher, so so people can buy it directly from them.
Okay. Brianna, do you guys sell it through COVID, through React 19?
We need to be. It's on the to-do list.
To-do list. Okay. Yeah, because usually I always, when I have authors on my show, I always tell the listeners to go to Amazon, read the reviews, buy the book directly from the authors so that all the money goes into their pocket. And then after you've read it, go back to Amazon and write a review, because that's where all the eyeballs are. So, you know, if you can do that directly through React 19, that would be great. But in the meantime,
if people are in the UK, people in the UK can get them from me.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's actually the only way they can get them in the UK is through Caroline.
There's been a bit of a problem. We're not quite sure what's behind it, but Amazon have been delaying its release since November, and it just keeps getting delayed over and over again.
So how can they reach you? Because we have a world, we have a lot of listeners from the UK and Australia and all over the world. So where can they reach out to you directly to get a copy of that book, Caroline?
So my Facebook page is public. And I use my real name, so Caroline Pover on there. My website is carolinepover.com, and people can either email me or send me a message through Facebook if they want to have a copy.
Very good. Very, very good. Well, thank you so much for being here today. I'm not kidding when I say we could talk for another 3 or 4 hours about this, because there's so much to say. And I'm sure that a lot of it has been, you know, condensed into your book. So as we close out today, I want to say a special, special thanks to everyone who joins us here every week at This Week with Dr. T, our 10 Penny Prime members, your monthly contribution is what keeps us going. And so with that, I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible. I close all my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. Until the next time, lean into God, trust Him for everything. He won't let you down. Caroline, Brianna, thank you so much for your work. Thank you for sharing your story. And to everyone else, we'll see you again here next week, same place, same time. Goodbye and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body's vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.